Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Monday, the 17th of March, recording at 8:40 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first the highlights here, and my goodness, there was a lot of selling that took place today. Asian stock markets were pretty weak generally. The Hang Seng Index had, I believe, the biggest fall, down over 5%. Now, not all of the markets were massacred in Asia, but generally, but I think all suffered downward pressure. Here, European markets were similarly weak. Switzerland, I think, probably had the biggest decline, down 5%. But UK FTSE was down 3.86%, and DAX. The German DAX was down over 4%. Now, Wall Street came in weak and stayed weak for quite a while, then rallied back to modest gains, and then went back to triple-digit declines for the Dow, then rallied to triple-digit gains about 20 minutes before the close, and then gave that up to close up 21 on the day, but the Standard & Poor's and the NASDAQ were weaker. And elsewhere, we saw government bonds were strong, not surprisingly, but not as strong as they've been of late. So further gains, but maybe those trends have been stretched a bit. I'm talking about government bond prices now. Ditto the U.S. dollar. Dollar index got hammered down to 70.69. That's another new all-time low, but closed nearly a point above that. It's still down on the day, down 219 ticks as I speak. And in some of the gyrations here, the euro soared up to 159.04 and then closed at 150, well, trading after hours here at 157.29. I'll give you an idea of what's going on. The Australian dollar weakened, coming back down to 92, and sterling fell back below 2, currently 199.81. But the theme of the day here, I think, is further deleveraging. And we saw the dollar slide down to, actually got down against the yen to 95.78. That must be getting down near the historic lows. And is currently at 97.34. So that's still down 176, but bounced well off those lows. It gives you an idea of what took place in the currency markets generally. Now, gold had its glory moment really in the Asian trading hours, with bullion getting up to 1032.70, but then fell back quite a bit, fell back under $1,000, getting down to 994, and it's currently trading at 1,005. That's up 255. Platinum took the big hit here today, down 121. Remember that had the earlier blowout. On the upside, palladium's down fairly sharply, 45. And silver, again, silver hit a new record high, 21.44. I think that's probably in early Asian trading as well. But then fell all the way down to 1980. So these are huge swings that are taking place. And it's currently down 36 after hours, trading at 20.29.5. And we had limit down in soybeans and corn. We had a big hit in wheat as well. Big hit in coffee, and also cotton and cocoa. So heavy selling in the commodities, and the industrial metals were all down And to my chagrin, the biggest decline there was the nickel market, where the futures 3 months price rather fell $3,150 to 29,400. Okay. So what's going on here overall? Deleveraging. That's the main theme in here. And really, this has been something that we've been seeing for a while. And people are scrambling to cash up. The leverage in markets, as we've known all along, was very, very substantial. And everything from people cutting losses to, I think, people who've done very well in the commodity markets saying, not surprisingly, enough is enough, and chopping out positions there. Then on the other side of the equation, well, let me stick with the deleveraging. And I think people were alarmed more by the Bear Stearns deal that the Fed pulled off, the Fed and the Treasury perhaps advising on that. I thought it was quite an elegant deal, as one colleague put it. And it was a creative solution. I think it would have been worse for markets if there had been no deal, of course. What I think has unnerved investors, and certainly in Asia, and looking at this, is that only a couple of days beforehand, I believe, 2 or 3 days beforehand, that Bear Stearns had been saying no problem with liquidity, and then 2 days later they say, well, things have changed. Well, that's unnerving, to put it mildly. And the losses that some shareholders have been taking are absolutely huge. So when we talk about central banks shouldn't be bailing out, or some people are talking about fulminating about central banks, how they shouldn't be bailing out rich people on Wall Street or in the City of London. Well, I'm not sure they are. Certainly shareholders are taking quite a hit here in terms of these financials. Well, the net result of this is that a lot of stock market indices broke down through those January reaction lows. Those are levels that I had said marked a selling climax, as they did indeed. But I was hoping that those lows would hold. And they haven't all gone by any means, but enough of them have gone here to certainly call the others into doubt, or to question the sustainability of the others. Interestingly, the S&P and the Dow remained above those January levels, but that's perhaps quite understandable when people know that there's going to be a whacking big interest rate cut tomorrow, and people would be a little cautious, or bears would be a little cautious before that, or maybe some bulls emboldened to establish some long positions before that announcement. But you know, we come down to the practical realities of it, is a trend is a trend until it stops, and the fact that a number of stock market indices have taken out those January reaction lows now, that does open the door, of course, to further declines, and markets will have to push back up into those prior trading ranges pretty quickly, this week, for instance, to really offset the current prospects for some further weakness within those trends. Now, I readily confess to being surprised by the extent of the damage that's taken place resulting from this Western financial crisis. But again, let's not overlook all those sentiment indicators. I think that what a lot of people are now debating is not whether, I'll put it this way. You've got the Armageddon group at one extreme. I think that's not a good bet overall. They're right in saying that yes, we haven't been in this particular type of situation, or certainly not to the same extent before. Even if we accept that this is the worst financial crisis since World War II, I'm not sure I agree with that, but a number of people do feel that way. I think it would be, for instance, I feel that 73, 74 was worse. And people say, well, that was mainly about inflation, but well, the banks all went bust at that time, or were technically bust, but as we've discussed on so many occasions, governments don't let their entire banking sector go bust. They bail them out through the yield curve, which is what's happening here once again. But a big difference this time is that the United States was pretty well on its own as by far the largest economy in the world. It still is the largest economy in the world by a significant margin, but there are other very strong growth engines out there. This was not the case back in 1973, 74. And Japan was only beginning its long rise. So, point I'm trying to make is that the US economy did not have that strong global economy that we have today. So again, we go back to that situation of the two-tier US economy with the domestic side being in the severest of recessions and very unlikely to come out of that anytime soon, but with a reasonably thriving international section, which is doing very well, consolidating. Selling overseas and consolidating earnings in the weak dollar. So I think that's an important difference, but let's suffice it to say it's a serious crisis, and I don't want to be I don't want to be accused of being nonchalant or complacent about it. It has surprised me in its enormity. I haven't lived through one of these before, and I don't think anybody else really has either, who's around today at any rate. Now, a point I want to focus on, though, is that among, I think, a large proportion of the most rational people, the debate today is over how much blood in the streets we actually have to see. Before we can say that this is pretty well over. Well, we can't say it's over when we're getting the downward trends reaffirmed by a number of indices around the world. But given the extremes on those sentiment indicators, and I said when I published that last Investors Intelligence one last week, I said that that did not guarantee that we had seen the actual low, but it said that we are in the region of the low, or that we're in the beginning at least of the bottoming out process. Now, I still think that's quite likely to be the case, although that has been called into question here by the number of downward breaks that we have seen from some indices. I still think that valuations, even if you say, well, a lot of these companies fiddle their statements. This is not a time when they need to fiddle their statements, incidentally. This is a time when they would want to be throwing every skeleton out of the closet here, write it all off. They can blame it on the US centered financial crisis, for instance, and it would be foolish not to do so. So how much blood do we need to see in the streets? And to use that colorful adage, well, there's plenty around with some big name hedge funds going bust and with the Bear Stearns thing. And of course, when you get something like Bear Stearns, then everybody says, who's next? And then they start talking about Lehman Brothers. Well, according to Bloomberg, Lehman Brothers is in a great deal better shape than Bear Stearns was. Well, we'll soon find out. But we have a panicky atmosphere here that helped to push, incidentally, it helped to push the VIX index back up above the 30 level, 35 level, I should say, here today. And I think it's the highs that we've seen on the previous selling climaxes were up at 37 and a half. That doesn't mean that it can't go higher still. That doesn't mean that stock markets can't go lower still in here, because no one can say just to what extent people are going to panic during the deleveraging move. Now, on the other side of the equation, we have the Fed and other central banks pumping in the liquidity. And the Fed has certainly targeted this stock market. And I think once having embarked on that journey, it's going to continue to do so. And there are a lot of people around saying, well, the Fed's running out of ammunition, or the Fed can't do this, or the Fed can't do that. Well, of course, the Fed is only one branch of the government that can become involved. We could certainly see the White House become more involved. We can see the Treasury become more involved. Not that they haven't both been involved already, but it would be, I think, naive to say that, well, that the Fed's going to suddenly fess up or go quiet and say, we're beat, guys. There's nothing else that we can actually do about this. They will go on and on, and I don't doubt that they will nationalize a whole lot of these mortgages. I think that's really quite likely, and perhaps other debts. And yes, there will be an inflationary cost in this process, but there are also very big deflationary pressures, as I've mentioned before, from the freeze up in lending that we've actually seen, the burst housing bubble, the slump in consumer spending, the rising unemployment. So I think it's I think the Fed is certainly going to continue to take risks on the side of inflation. And again, as I've said, that most of that inflation has been in the energy and food prices. But interestingly, we've seen some respite on that score here today. Okay, what's likely to happen here tomorrow? I think my guess is that Asian markets will remain very wary, very, very guarded. And my hunch is that we'll get a big rate cut from the Fed, and I would not put it past them pulling another rabbit or two out of the hat, if not tomorrow, then later on this week before that before the holidays that are coming up, commencing with Good Friday. Okay. What about the rest of these markets? Certainly, bond prices. Well, lousy yields, particularly against the background of the inflation that we're seeing around the world, but it's understandable that we're getting that so-called flight to, and I have to put this in inverted commas, quote, quality, unquote. And the US dollar looks pretty stretched in the short term, but you remember it wasn't all that long ago that some big name firms were talking about this being the year of the dollar. Well, certainly the first 3 months here have been pretty well a disaster, although we're only just slightly more than halfway through this month. But talk of intervention has been in the air. I think that we're probably going to only get talk for a while, and talk has worked well enough to pass the strong currency hot potato to other currencies in here. In other words, when central banks have become involved and possibly done a little unilateral intervention, and certainly plenty of jawboning that has helped to take the upward pressure off their currencies. So I think we're going to go on seeing more of that. But I have said all along that I did feel, and when I say all along, I've said this for at least a couple of years, that we would almost certainly have to get multilateral intervention at some stage to check the dollar slide. If we were to get it tomorrow, for instance, and I don't expect that, but we've reached the stage of the dollar's decline where we have to start to think about the possibility of being surprised, although it shouldn't be too much of a surprise, by some actual intervention. I think they would just be trying to slow the decline overall. And everybody knows that a soft dollar is what the US economy needs, although it doesn't need the additional inflationary pressures that that will bring. But as I've just said a few moments ago, that that's not the priority at a time when some of those deflationary pressures are profound. The Fed would much rather have the inflation than go into the Japanese type of situation, as some people have forecast would be the case. I don't agree with that forecast. Now, what about these commodities? I've been saying for a while that first the precious metal cycle was getting long in the tooth, and that we had seen the leader, platinum, accelerate dramatically higher and then lose its uptrend consistency. So platinum looks very toppy. And we've seen palladium come back down sharply after its acceleration up. The better technical patterns are in gold and silver, but silver has certainly become more erratic, and gold's trend is steepened. And again, I've talked about that sort of roughly 26-month cycle, and we haven't reached that date yet, but normally these cycles tend to get a little bit shorter as they go on. So the risks of, in terms of another medium-term correction, have probably gone up quite a bit. Well, I won't say probably. They've certainly gone up. We've had a terrific run here in gold and the other precious metals, and platinum's lead right now is bearish. So therefore, one wants to be careful on the leveraged trades. I think that a long-term holder of bullion can ride out a correction. But if you didn't want to, this is the time to be lightening a position. If you don't want to sit out a big multi-month corrective phase, then one should be lightening up. And that applies to anything. It certainly applies to fuller money themes, and it applies to any other positions you might have. If you don't want to sit out a medium-term correction, even though you think it's in a long-term bull market, and inevitably there's a subjective element to that, which is why I've only identified three secular bull market themes here, and being resources and the Asian-led emerging markets and the a global infrastructure boom. And many play the global infrastructure boom through the Asian-led emerging markets and also resources. That's certainly what I do. But you could extend it out to construction equipment companies and things like that. Okay. But I'm talking about these commodities and precious metals being, I think, over the tipping point in terms of entering the medium-term correction phase, say led by platinum, and the others can't be all that many weeks behind. So one wants to be a bit careful here. There's a possibility that as long as they don't come down too quickly, that the shares could perform, provided we get steadier stock markets generally. Now, we've had anything but steady stock markets for the most part, and that has been a drag on the gold mining shares, although they've done pretty well, certainly, and they've done spectacularly well on a relative basis, not least against financials. So they aren't perhaps as overextended as the metals, but if we get medium-term corrections in the metals, then I would expect most of the shares to pull back as well. Although there is that factor that I've mentioned before, that following the peak of gold in 1980, when it got up to $850 and then fell back quite swiftly, during the next year or more, some of the gold shares did spectacularly well, as I recall, not least because people were extrapolating the bullion price much higher, although it was a hugely important peak for bullion, as you know. Now, we've had a lot of aggressive bullish forecasts for gold recently, and people tend to just extrapolate. If the target's filled, then they come out with another target on the upside, and I'm not going to do that. I mean, I've been pleasantly surprised to see gold do as well as it has done here, and having achieved this $1,000 milestone in a bit, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we had seen most of what we're going to get in the medium term. And medium term for me is anything from a few months to a couple of years. But these medium-term corrections in the precious metals, the two previous ones, have been quite lengthy. We're talking of something of in excess of a year here, and I think that is the risk for gold. Now, the foods. I've said this was a very crowded pitch and a very crowded trade, in other words, and that we would need to be careful here. The agricultural commodities were never meant to be, investment markets for pension funds and hedge funds and the like. Futures markets exist, of course, and that you don't have liquidity in the futures markets without speculative participation. But it was never in the history of the futures markets as large as the investment interest has been in the last number of months. So I've s described that as being a bit dangerous. First, some of these trends accelerated upwards. Well, that's always an ending of an undetermined duration, but the bigger the acceleration, usually the more significant the correction is, both in terms of the percentage pullback and the amount of time spent in convalescence before secular bull trends can resume. And of course, many of the best bull markets end in big accelerations. And my guess is that we have not ended the bull markets for these foods, but that they've run ahead. They run well ahead of themselves. And I think the low-hanging fruit in this sector. Nice, image there to use for agricultural commodities. The low-hanging fruit has been plucked, so I would be quite careful in this area. And lastly, crude oil. We had a big downward dynamic in here today. That has certainly interrupted the trend. Got up to a high here today. I think this was the high that we've seen so far, 111.80. And then thumped back down quite sharply to 103.24. It's only down four. I say only down four, but that's a big reaction here at 106. So it looks to me as if the commodities have boiled over. And if I offered a real contrarian view here, I would say that the commodity sectors, the ones that have really performed in here, and that's been led by foods with and followed by precious metals, are as overbought right now as a number of sectors of the stock market are oversold. And I will end on that note so we can look forward to a little more excitement here tomorrow as well. Meanwhile, all the best to all of you.